God, the Beneficent, the Merciful. I would like to greet all of you out there in the viewing audience and the greeting words of peace. We want to thank you for tuning in to Knowledge for Life, Knowledge Cipher, where we're going to present to you some of the top professionals in the health and wellness arena to talk about issues impacting the Black community. And we want to dedicate this to a young lady who helped us put this together, Sister Heather Holland, and we want to send her our well wishes. She fell ill, wasn't able to be a part of this program at this time, so we want to send her our well wishes. As we all know, COVID-19 brought out a lot of what they call pre-existing conditions. We were suffering not only from pre-existing conditions, but on the mental health arena, we were suffering from stigma. Why are we putting this program together, Knowledge Cipher? It is because we are suffering in America from health conditions that if we only had the knowledge of, we could reverse those conditions. So listen to some of these that I want to present to you as we are suffering from. Health disparities that are present in the Black community. One is cardiovascular disease. According to the American Heart Association, Black people are at a higher risk of cardiovascular disease than white Americans. We develop blood pressure earlier in life and have a higher rate of hypertension, stroke, and heart disease. In fact, Blacks are 20% more likely to die from heart disease compared to non-Hispanic whites. Look at diabetes. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the CDC, reports that Blacks are more likely to develop type 2 diabetes compared to white Americans. We are also more likely to suffer complications such as kidney failure, amputations, and blindness due to diabetes-related complications. In 2018, the prevalence of diagnosed diabetes was 14.7% among Black ages 18 years old and older. Obesity. Obesity rates are higher among Blacks compared to other racial and ethnic groups. According to the CDC, approximately 39.8% of non-Hispanic Black adults are obese. Obesity increases the risk of developing other chronic conditions such as heart disease, diabetes, and certain cancers. HIV. Blacks account for a disproportionate number of new HIV diagnoses in the United States. The CDC reports that although Blacks make up 13% of the U.S. population, we account for 42% of the new HIV diagnoses in 2019. Factors contributing to this disparity include socioeconomic factors, stigma, and limited access to health care. Cancer. Cancer incidence and mortality rates vary among different cancer types, but Blacks have a higher death rate for most cancers compared to other racial and ethnic groups. Factors such as a lack of access to screening and treatment, as well as genetic and environmental factors, contribute to these disparities. Mental health disorders include depression, anxiety, post-traumatic stress disorder, or PTSD. According to the Health and Human Service Office of Minority Health, Blacks are 20% more likely to experience serious mental health problems than the general population. However, we are less likely to receive mental health treatment. And the canary I say that's in the coal mine is infant and maternal mortality. Maternal mortality rates are significantly higher among black women compared to white women. The CDC reports that black women are 4 times more likely to die from pregnancy-related complications than white women. Factors contributing to these disparities include inadequate access to prenatal care, systemic racism, in other words, the environment is so toxic, and implicit bias in healthcare settings. And that's history in and of itself, the medical industry and its relationship to the black woman. As far as our mental health, as we all know in the black community, we have a stigma when it comes down to seeking mental health therapy. And so these are some of the things that we definitely want to address, and we want to erase those stigmas. And so with that, I want to introduce our first speaker, and all of them are very qualified, but our sister is going to talk to us from a perspective of health that we may not have thought of, but I won't go into it any more than that. I want to go ahead and introduce to you Dr. Benita Kelly.
Well, good evening, everyone. It really is good to be here and to be talking to you from my area of expertise, from intercultural communication. There's a lot to say. Mm-hmm. And I think that what we are talking about and what we need to begin to think about is our cultural health. That will always be my perspective here. How it is that we understand and recognize us, ourselves as cultural beings that in many ways, based upon what Brother Muhammad has said, are under cultural attack or are in cultural, not in cultural, connection with ourselves. And this is because of the ways that societies are built. And our society, in fact, has been built according to privilege one particular cultural thought and way of being, and which we would have, I'm going to go ahead and just kind of put on it, put on the idea that we're talking about a dualistic cultural system that is the larger culture in the United States that everyone who lives in it is exposed to. And a dualistic culture is one that is says either or. So something like when you're sick is like either I'm sick or I'm healthy. And so you can actually see how someone who's moving according to this particular worldview can actually begin to dismiss the certain things that might be going on with their body. We'll get into this in a different kind of way, but I'm going to give you a huge overview. Worldview is really important because the way, it really is literally the way that we look at the world. One of the things that we have not yet really started to discuss in terms of how we approach the world are the worldviews of people who are of melanated backgrounds. African people, African American people tend to come from a collectivist worldview. So how it is that I'm doing is reflected in who you are. Anytime, said Dr. James Comer, who was a black psychologist, wrote one of the first books on black psychology years ago, said that when those things started, those concerns about what's happening to a child or what's happening to other people who are reflected in my own humanity are not the things that we are paying attention to, that because of our trauma, we ignore and or we find reasons to blame them for what it is they're going through. Those were the beginnings of the breakdown of our own cultural worldview, or what I call tend to call cultural incursions, where something and the ways that we believed in how we should be were something that we didn't protect. That's something that belongs to me and what our people are going to hold on to in order to make it through. Some people wonder, how did we make it through? How did I get over? And how I got over was because what happened to you was important to me, and we linked together with a common sense of how the world should be and how we should be a just society and treat each other justly in order for us to move forward. If you're looking into something, you say, well, where'd you get that from? We can talk about good speech. which was a way that a society, we had a philosophy of how a society should move forward that was a collectivist way. When you look at certain things like documents and et cetera, you're looking at the Tahotep talking about what makes a just society, and these were the edicts called good speech. Mm-hmm. And the more we move away from good speech or feel pressed to move away from good speech, the more we're not actually anchored in a cultural mindset that is a collectivist one that says what happens to you is what is also what is important to me. So yeah, I'm coming also from an African-centered cultural and psychological point of view, but there's really a great deal of research and perspective that's out there in order for us to understand who we are culturally. Because no matter what people try to do, they cannot take our culture away from us. When people started looking at indigenous people in the United States, and why was it, even though they snatched those babies and those families away from their families, why did Indian people, indigenous Americans, not leave their culture? Cultural anthropology said because culturally, their people are going to act as they have developed a system of behavior over eons and eons, right? And so when people when that's under attack, the people they move back into using it, but they also may not honor it. They may feel bad or be made to feel bad about thinking of themselves culturally. And so they do it in the sly. Right? So you sit back and you see some young kid who allows somebody to get onto the bus, and a person says, thank you, someone who's an elder, get onto the bus. That's because they do care about an elder, but when the elder says thank you, the child ignores it. Because the elder says, well, that rude child. But in fact, those are the ways that we have actually come to support and also come to protect who we are culturally, because again, we've been under attack culturally for quite some time. Mm. What we thought was normal, someone pathologized it. And it was right around the 1960s that Walter Pillow and Franklin and Pillow's work talked about how we began, in the 60s, when we, integration and all of that wonderful, began to realize as we were moving into an integrated system, we thought and were told and bought that we were supposed to leave our culture behind in order to be accepted in the society that we were moving into or being allowed into. And that caused us traumas. It caused us psychological and cultural traumas, and we had no way to move, we had no way to actually validate that that was what was keeping us going in the country. Mm-hmm. We wonder how things changed so quickly since from the 60s to only the 2023, 2024s. And that is that someone has said, well, you're already accepted, but the culture has not been understood in terms of how important it is to us as a people, and therefore we are constantly at odds with ourselves and with the culture that we're coming up against in order and are protecting ourselves in way culture shock. We are protecting ourselves in ways that actually blow back or harm who we are. It's because, again, we need to embrace who we are, and we also need reasons and hooks in order for us to say, oh, that is a cultural way of being that can in fact be honored. It doesn't keep anybody from being honored besides our own, but it also helps to anchor us so that we can in fact say, it's a good thing for me to have mental health. Mental health is about cultural worldview and what I hold on to. It's a good thing for me to have physical health because we were a physical health people before. It's good to reclaim those things. So you get a sense of what it is I'll be talking about. We are a microculture. African American people are a microculture in the macroculture of a society. And this macroculture is one that's dominated by dualistic worldview. But collectivist worldview, folks have realized that that is how we move forward. And that is the larger collectivist worldview. Peoples are the largest groups of people in the world. We just have to find where it is that we can reinforce with one another. So I hope that this has been something that you said, whoa, hadn't thought about it that way. And I'll be here to represent that.
Excellent. Thank you. Wonderful. Thank you, Dr. Kelly. We appreciate that. And like you said, you know, culture is something that we overlook. Many of us hear the word a lot, culture, but we really don't understand that, how deep that word is. And so one of the things that we hear from Malcolm X is that we were robbed of our name, our language, our religion, and our culture. And culture is just simply a way that we interact with each other, the way that we solve problems. So thank you, Dr. Kelly. I appreciate that. And next up, we have our sister, Dr. Marquetta Colbert, and she will take us into another aspect of health and wellness.
Thank you, Mr. Muhammad. So my name is Dr. Marquetta Colbert, and I am an advanced practice nurse with a doctorate degree. I also own Colbert Family Health and Wellness, two locations in Dayton, Ohio, and I've been practicing independently for 14 years. So one of the things that I'm going to talk about specifically today is about stigma, also what I've seen both professionally and personally, what I've seen with health, what I've seen over the years. I treat patients of all ages with primary care as well as mental health. So I do both primary care and psychiatric. And, you know, what's interesting is to see over the, when I opened my practice 14 years ago, I had the first practice owned by the, well, I was the third in the state of Ohio to open a practice as an advanced practice nurse. And there has been so many changes over the years. More advanced practice nurses opening up practices, which is a great thing. But most importantly, with this pandemic and COVID coming and occurring, and now it's 3 years past, I've seen what has happened in patients that I've taken care of. I've seen what's happened in the industry. And so I want to talk a little bit about stigma. I want to talk about, earlier he mentioned all of the health disparities, and all of those health disparities I see in my practice, because not only do I treat African Americans, but I treat patients of all races and ages, as I mentioned earlier, African Americans definitely being my highest percentage. And most people want to be seen and treated by someone that looks like them. She talked about cultural, and that's a big part of it. So I do find more people looking for providers who look like them, who can identify with them, who can kind of understand not just physically their physical health, but understand socially maybe what's going on at home. And in the larger industry, insurance companies and larger companies are looking at providers being able to not only diagnose and treat patients, but also be able to make referrals and help them with the social aspects that are occurring in their lives, and how those social things that's going on really ultimately affect both their mental health and their personal or physical health. So we know that stigma is something that we have to address. We know that if we go back in history, back from the beginning of time, from one major book that I have been reading is called Black Angels, and this book highlights nurses, black nurses, who back in the 1920s and 1930s were, they came from the South and they went to New York, and these nurses never got credit for being the ones to help cure tuberculosis. And so we know that there were a lot of things associated with that. But so really when we talk about stigma, why is it so important? Well, if a person is diagnosed with diabetes, or let's take something like HIV, and a person is diagnosed with that, they may be scared to get treatment. They may feel that a person is not going to understand how, or they may treat them differently. Maybe they work at a place where they think that they're going to be treated differently. They may lose their job if somebody finds out. So there's a lot of things that come into play when we talk about stigma. I wanted to mention that 24 years ago, I was diagnosed with cancer. And at the time that I was diagnosed with cancer, I was a registered nurse. I experienced stigma in that I needed to have treatment for my cancer, and the provider that I was seeing, when I called and explained the symptoms I was having, the provider that I was seeing basically let me know that I wouldn't be getting any medications for pain or for sleep. And what I was experiencing was symptoms related to not having my hormone from my thyroid gland that had cancer. So those symptoms caused me to not sleep. And it wasn't that I was seeking anything for sleep or pain. I was seeking for thyroid medication because my gland had been taken. That was a pivotal point in my life. I had been a nurse. I had great insurance. I had a great family. And I felt that if that provider, that surgeon that I was seeing didn't understand or didn't take the time to treat me the way that I should have been treated, how would people who had not as much knowledge, lack of insurance, and suffer from health problems, how would they be treated? That was the time, that was the pivotal time in my life that I decided that I needed to go back to school and become an advanced practice nurse and provide the type of care that I should have received. And I wanted to provide that type of care to anyone who is seeing, no matter what their race, social background, cultural background, or economic background was. And so I started my journey for being an advanced practice nurse. So the reason programs like this program is important is because we are able to bring education and we are able to share with the audience and those who watch the program each month as we highlight different health topics and different social things on the program. We're able to bring that to you, and you will see over the course of several months the importance of the program and how that does not only impact your health but impacts your overall wellness and also your overall daily functioning. I am participating in this program because my focus, again, is always to provide education and health to anyone who seeks out whether it's just the education or just seeks out treatment. As I mentioned, I've actually been an advanced practice nurse for 17 years and a registered nurse for 25 years. So I've worked in many areas from critical care currently primary care and mental health, but also educating within the community. I treat all conditions from everything that was mentioned earlier. And so I look forward to working to being on this advisory board and being part of Knowledge Cipher program and providing additional health education in the future.
All right, thank you. And so now moving forward, we have the legendary Dr. Morris Brown. And I'll go ahead and let him introduce his extensive background. We'll bring up Dr. Morris Brown.
Thank you, Brother Muhammad. Thank you for the opportunity. This has been a slow process. We did start talking about it back this summer and brought in a few people with different ideas, and this is not a result of our work. So thank you for your continuous efforts and your determination to hold me accountable and then to expand it to other people. Mm-hmm. So I'm really glad to be sharing the stage with Dr. Cruz and Dr. Keller. And there will be others that are part of this panel that you won't see tonight, but you will see them in the future. Mm-hmm. One is Ricky Poole, for sure, and then there will be others. So not to rehash all that's been said, but I practiced medicine, as you all know, for 40 years. And as a result of that experience, I was motivated to go outside of my office to do other things. Thus, we did start the WDA program of healthy living that was later shared and continued by definitely felt that the community needed education. And you can't do that in an office setting, not as you can in public media. So this is a continuation of the work that we actually started about 15 years ago in WDAO. What we're hoping to bring to the community are thought leaders who are willing to think outside of the box and to share their knowledge with the community. We really want you all to be a part of this. And the way you're going to participate is by the chat room and by reaching out to us, making suggestions. We would love to have every generation represented here, some Gen X's, baby boomers, Gen Y, because your issues are different depending on where you are and what stage in your life. And we don't want to sit here and just talk about diseases. The wonderful presentation that Dr. Kelly gave talked about a culture that was at one time nourishing and was at one time restorative. And unfortunately, because I think the dominant culture has compromised us for 300 years, we've sort of lost that restorative, if you are, that collectivism. If you're affected, then so am I. If your child's affected, then so is my child. What we know is that those social determinants of health, the individual has very little control of that because you can't always move into a neighborhood that you want to move in. Your finances may limit it. But your health should not be determined by where you live, but we know that it is. So where you live, where you work, where you play, where you worship, where you eat, where you shop, all of those factors are what we are dealing with in Dayton, specifically West Dayton. So we'll speak into West Dayton and say, we want you to heal. We want you to be whole. We want to put some things in this neighborhood that will prevent these diseases that Marquetta still treat and that I treated for 40 years. We'd like to see more parks so people can walk safely. We want to see more food options. Fortunately, Gem City Market is here now, and there's one that will soon be the second larger market. And, of course, we're glad to have the Gordons and the others, and even at least the dollar store is providing some food. But we really want fresh vegetables. And we spent the first part of the hour here talking about the gardens at Edgemont and the soon-to-be other gardens all over the city that will help us bring these fresh foods into this city. So it is important that we make a collective move to improve where we the outcome that we expect. We can't just leave things as they are, or they will stay the same. But we do have to admit that there are several factors that we have to be aware of that are limiting our access. As Marquetta said, people want providers that look like them. And it doesn't have to always be one that look like you, but it does have to be one that's sensitive to your culture. So we welcome anybody that comes into our neighborhood who's willing to learn our culture and understand that there are some unique things in that culture that, for the most part, can still be beneficial, but that culture in West Dayton is not the same as that culture in Oakwood or Centerville or even necessarily even Moraine or East Dayton. There are some uniqueness that you have to know. So if you want to be a part of this, we invite any and everybody to reach out. There's some contact information that you'll see at the end of the program. We are going to be looking for sponsors so we can keep this program going. But we're also looking for participation more so than sponsors. We want this conversation to expand into whatever arena it needs to expand in. We'll definitely focus on health. And every month we're going to bring you a health topic. But within that health topic, we're going to look at social issues that may affect that. Right. We're going to look at culture issues that may affect that topic. So we'll talk about healthcare disparities. We'll talk about diabetes, obesity, heart disease, infant mortality. Those are the topics we're going to be talking about. But we want to go further than what happens when you go into your doctor's office. Mm. We want to look to see what can we as a community do to support these women that are having babies that are dying at a much of 4 times the rate of white babies. Mm. What is that all about? What can we do to prevent that? Doulas are very popular now, and it should be a requirement that insurance companies provide that, but a lot of them will not. Mm. But the data shows that black women that have doulas have more healthier babies. So those are the conversations we want to have. We want to see what are the deficiencies in the neighborhood. And you guys who are living this life will know more than we know. We don't know that part of it. But we do want you to make these, hold us accountable, and so that give us an advance notice of the topics you want to hear about. And we'll be glad to share that with you. The other reason I'm doing this is the same reason I started at the radio program years ago, was the misinformation. Mm. Information, yes, there's a lot out there. Technology, yes, there's a lot out there. Artificial intelligence, yes, it's just making matters better, worse. Take your pick, depending on which side you're listening to. There are some negatives out of that good technology. The negatives are people now can create whatever they want and can convince you. It's possible that you might see me saying the total opposite of what I said tonight because somebody used AI and created an image of me. So we want to help the community discern when is this data good data? When is this good knowledge? And all knowledge is not good. I used to say all knowledge is good, but not necessarily, because a lot of people now are making deliberate lies, and they talk about alternative truths. And what truth are you talking about? Well, I'm naive enough, coming from Alabama, that truth is truth. You told a lie. You told the truth. But now there's an alternative fact. There's an alternative truth. So we want to help you discern that. There are ways you can look at material and decide, is this factual? Is this something I can believe? We want you to use us as your reference point. Call us up. We saw this on YouTube. That's another, whatever you want to call it. There's some positives and some negatives. We saw this on YouTube, and it said XYZ. Is that true? We want you to trust us to do the work. If we don't have the answer, we'll do the legwork before the next program and have answers for you. The good thing about science, and I spent my life being a scientist, my data is based on science. It's based on the data. It's not what my mama said, or it's not what the lady on the corner said. I vet all of it. I want to see documentations that will help me make the decision, because I know there are two sides of every story. In fact, there can be 10 sides to one story. But we want to help our community become more knowledgeable. We want you to be a part of this table. This table should extend out into the community, where you know you can come here and get the facts. There are a lot of lies. The elections are coming. You're going to hear more lies. When you look at the political, which is part of our community, what happens in the politics, and we aren't throwing stones at any one person, but voter restrictions, limiting access to voting, what is that all about? They're limiting voting so that they can control the narrative. So you got to understand that it is important that your voice be heard. Your voice can be heard, and your voice may be in opposition to my voice. That's your choice. But you got to know your voice need to be heard. And then as we share ideas back and forth, you might can convince me that some of my ideas are misplaced. And I welcome that dialogue. I may convince you that some of your ideas are misplaced. But what I say is, before you grab a story and run with it, vet it. Check it out. Check out the source. See who's saying it. What's the motivation for them saying it? And you got to get very comfortable with alternative sources that are valid. You got to know that it's the gospel. You got to know, where do you get the accurate information? So with the political scenes being as they are, you're going to, again, hear a lot more. That you're going to, I want you to question it. I want you to even question anything I say tonight. Go vet it. Check it out and see what did any of us say. Can you validate it? If you can't validate it, then you might want to assume that we just up here blowing smoke. That's not our purpose. Our purpose is to be your partner as you try and have a healthier life for yourself, a healthier life for your community. Mm-hmm. This is not the time to be silent. We need all voices. Mm-hmm. All voices need to be heard. And as you become knowledgeable, you're going to be moved to action. And as you move to action, we can make West Dayton a healthier place, a healthy environment, because you're involved. Don't take a nihilistic attitude. Don't give up hope. Don't think it's all over. We've got major problems, and we can enumerate them. We'll be talking about them, gun violence and some other things that I've talked about for years. But we can't give up hope. We've got to look at the data. We've got to hold people accountable. We've got to join like minds, and we got to make a difference. This is not the time to be silent. This is not the time to be inactive. Come join us in this journey.
All right. Thank you. Beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you all so much for this first program, Knowledge Cipher. And we also want to thank you all for tuning in. And we want to invite you, if you enjoyed this program, to go to our website. That's www.knowforlife, that's K-N-O-W, the number 4, L-I-F-E, .net. And also, we're going to put the QR code on the screen, and you can scan this QR code, and it will take you directly to our website, where you can sign up for our newsletter. And so our newsletter is what follows up after these conferences. So in the newsletter, you will have not only a link to where you can watch the conference, but we will also have in that newsletter the resources that will come out of these conferences. We want you to follow us on social media. All you have to do is you can Google Know for Life. Just Google Know for Life, and our websites will come up. But you can find us on Facebook, on Instagram, on all the social media platforms under Know for Life. And last but not least, if you're interested and you want to help us to produce these programs, we want you to email us and let us know that you would like to be a part of this program that we're putting together. And if you're a medical health professional, we also want you to get in contact with us. And with that, I want to once again thank all of you for helping to put this program together. And we want to leave you all peace and blessings. May God continue to bless you and your family with the light of truth and understanding. God bless. We'll be right back.